Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. The winter solstice, or the first day of winter, is just a couple of days away on December 21st. Throughout human history, it has probably been the most important and the most celebrated time of the year, no matter who you were or where you lived. But before we take a little cultural journey, let's answer this question. What is a solstice? What makes December 21st the first day of winter? Imagine for a minute our planet spinning on a stick like a top. That stick makes what we call the North Pole and the South Pole. The North Pole is always pointing in one direction, which is at the North Star. And so no matter where we are in our orbit around the sun throughout the year, it is still pointing at the North Star. This is what gives us our four seasons. So on the winter solstice, or the first day of winter, the North Pole is pointing completely away from the sun, giving the Northern Hemisphere our winter, while the South Pole is pointed toward the sun, giving the Southern Hemisphere their first day of summer. The North Pole goes into complete darkness around the time of the solstice, while the sun never sets at the South Pole at this time. So remembering how this works will help us to understand how ancient cultures saw the world. They relied entirely on their senses and their physical observations of the world around them. They didn't know that the Earth was a sphere, that it was spinning, or that it was even orbiting the sun. They thought that the world was flat, that it had four corners, that it had a basement where the dead would go, and that it had four pillars that held the sky and the celestial bodies in place. Beginning with that worldview, they then tried to find explanations for the things that they observed. Why did the sun rise in the east and set in the west? What caused it to move across the sky? Why did the moon sometimes go completely dark during the night? And why did the sun sometimes go dark? What were those mysterious streaks of light that sometimes appeared in the night sky for several nights in a row? Through their observations of the sky above, of weather patterns, of good and bad years for crops, and other phenomena that they couldn't predict, they developed the concept of gods and goddesses. Some of those were good and benevolent, and some of them were unkind and devious. These ideas evolved over time to produce mythologies, rituals, and religious belief systems all over the world. And when it came to the winter solstice, most ancient cultures had the same thought. They saw the light of day growing shorter and shorter, and the sun got lower and lower in the sky. And they always watched where the sun would rise and set on the horizon. And they noticed that for about 8 days, when it reaches its most southerly point, it seemed to no longer move at all. So these ancient cultures, not understanding the science of what was happening, feared that the sun may never return to its summer position, or that it might disappear altogether, never ever to return. They waited with a lot of anticipation. They would wonder, had they done enough good things during the year for the sun god to return his light and warmth to them? And of course, every year, after the longest night had passed, the sun did reverse course and bring back the light and eventually the warmth until winter had passed into spring. Most cultures attached this to ideas of death and resurrection, and all of them created significant traditions, rituals, and celebrations to commemorate this time of year and the return of the sun. Back in the winter of 2020, I published the third Night Sky Tourist episode ever, and I shared cultural winter solstice traditions from around the world, and I enjoyed that episode so much. First of all, because I kind of love to geek out on history and learning about other worldviews. And second, because I had asked some of my friends who were serving on the board of the Fountain Hills Dark Sky Association at that time to help me share those traditions with you. I'm super excited to bring those stories back to you this year, and you'll get to hear those stories in just a minute. I've just published my 2024 stargazing guide, and I can't wait for you to get your eyes on it. This full color guide takes you month by month through the year so that you won't miss any meteor showers, full moons, eclipses, planet viewings, or other exciting celestial events. Each month has a featured constellation with cultural star stories to inspire your stargazing. And by the end of the year, you'll have a better grasp on how our moon works. And the best part, the 2024 Stargazing Guide is free. It's my gift to you because I want you to have your own stargazing experiences. It's always more fun when you know what you're looking for and when to look for it. To get your free download of the 2024 Stargazing Guide, visit nightskytourist.com and click on the link. It's so easy, and before you know it, it'll be right there in your inbox, ready for you to use the next time you go stargazing. If you're already a newsletter subscriber, watch your inbox. Your download is already heading your way. I can't wait to share the magic of the night sky with all of you in 2024. Visit nightskytourist.com today and get your free guide. Let's take a little trip around the world and get a little glimpse of different winter solstice traditions. Keep in mind that what is shared here is the most simplistic version of these traditions. It's just enough to give you a little taste for how others are enjoying this time of year. And I've also asked my friends to share their own favorite family traditions.
Hi, I'm Debbie Clayson. As with most midwinter festivals around the world, St. Lucia Day is a festival of lights that combined a Christian observance with an ancient Nordic solstice celebration. According to the Swedish tradition, St. Lucia was one of the earliest Christian martyrs, killed by the Romans for bringing food to the persecuted Christians hiding in Rome. As a symbol of light, Lucia and her feast day blended in naturally with the solstice traditions, such as lighting fires to scare away spirits during the longest day of the year. On St. Lucia Day, girls in Scandinavia wear white dresses with red sashes and wreaths of candles on their heads. This pays homage to the candles Lucia wore on her head to light her way as she carried the forbidden food in her arms. My favorite family holiday tradition is gathering with my parents, siblings, and their families on Christmas Eve. It's something we've been doing for more than 40 years. We don't wear any red sashes or wreaths of candles on our heads, but we definitely feast. The chocolate fountain is one of the highlights, along with a visit from Santa before he begins making his rounds. This year, more than ever, we are reminded that just being together, whether it's in person or through the magic of technology, is the greatest gift of all.
Hi, I'm Lisa Miller. The Zuni are a group of indigenous Pueblo people in northwestern New Mexico. They celebrated the winter solstice as the beginning of a new year with a ceremonial dance called Shaleko. After fasting and prayer, while observing the rising and setting sun for several days before the solstice, the Pequen, or sun priest, announced the Itiwana, the exact moment of the rebirth of the sun. At his signal, the singing and dancing began as 12 kachina clowns danced the shaleko with the people. These kachinas were 12-foot-tall effigies with bird heads who were seen as messengers from the gods. Their shaleko dances brought good fortune, abundant crops, and many children. My favorite holiday tradition in my family is playing hot and cold with the children to find their hidden Hanukkah presents. When they moved farther from the gift, we would say, colder, or you're freezing. As they got closer, the excitement built with, "You're getting hotter. You're burning up," as they found their present. It was such fun because the whole family got involved in the game.
Hi, I'm Scott Adams. Like the Zuni of New Mexico, the Hopi are a group of indigenous Pueblo people in northern Arizona. During the Hopi winter solstice celebration of soil, the sun chief takes on the duty of announcing sunset on the winter solstice. Then the all-night ceremony begins. They kindle fires, dance, and sometimes give gifts. The underground kivas were ritually opened to mark the beginning of the Kachina season. The Hopi sun watcher also observed the sun throughout the seasons so he could indicate when to plant crops and when to harvest. In our family, we've had two favorite holiday traditions. The first is that when our kids were young, to teach them about sharing, we took them to a store to pick out presents to donate to other children in the U.S. Marines Toys for Tots program. Although our kids are now adults with their own families, my wife and I still do that. The second tradition was to buy an enchanting holiday storybook such as The Polar Express or Christmas Secrets for each of our kids and read it to them on Christmas Eve.
Hi, I'm Clayton Corey. In Japan, the winter solstice celebration of Toji includes some long-standing traditions that are still observed today. The purpose of these traditions was to start the new year with health and good luck. It's a sacred time for farmers who welcome the return of the sun to nurture their crops after a long dark winter. People light bonfires on the winter solstice to beckon the sun to return, and bonfires are even set all around Mount Fuji. The Japanese have a solstice tradition of taking warm baths that are scented with yuzu, a citrus fruit that's said to warn off colds and promote good health. Eating kabocha soup, a Japanese pumpkin, is thought to bring good luck. I don't have any favorite holiday traditions myself. We always try to change things up and make each Christmas unique.
Hi, I'm Kim Robertson. I'm going to tell you about the Roman festival of Saturnalia, which was celebrated in the honor of God Saturn and the god of agriculture and time. This jolliest and most popular Roman festival was a week-long celebration when all social norms were thrown aside and everyone indulged in the rivalry. They overturned all ordinary lists and slaves became masters, prisoners went free, the rich gave to the poor, and every sacred right side up was flipped upside down. This evolved into a celebration of the birth of their god savior, Mithra, the unconquered sun who was born on December 25th. His birthday was witnessed by shepherds and magi, and he performed miracles like raising the dead and healing the blind. He had 12 disciples who represented the 12 signs of the zodiac, and he had a last supper with them before dying at the spring equinox and returning to the heavens. Many of our favorite Christmas traditions today were inherited from this wildly popular festival in ancient Rome. My favorite holiday tradition in my family is the Christmas Eve present. Christmas Eve, we get to open one present, and that's always our Christmas pajama, to snugly tuck us in bed, keep us warm for the next day of celebrations.
Hello, I'm Jeff Esposito. The story of the god Mithra did not start with the Romans. It started in Persia, a place that we know today as Iran. Iranians around the world celebrate Yalda on the longest and darkest night. It's a celebration of the triumph of Mithra, the sun god, over the darkness. The Persians would stay up all night in groups, usually with family and friends, to protect each other from the evil. They lit fires and performed charitable acts. They usually feasted on nuts and the last of the fruits from summer. When the sun rose in the morning, they celebrated because they knew that the evil was banished. Today, the religious significance of those ancient times are lost, but the old traditions of staying up late with friends, eating, and reading poetry continue to this day. Now, my favorite holiday tradition is our Christmas Eve dinner. Growing up Catholic, we abstained from eating meat on Christmas Eve. The rules have changed since then, but we still prepare the once-a-year feast of bacala, codfish salad, ensalada arancia, orange salad with salt, pepper, and garlic, spaghetti alish, anchovy sauce, and butterflied fried smelts. Yes, it's a bit unusual, but delicious. It's a meal I look forward to as soon as I finish eating.
Hello, I'm Tony Pastilli, a Dark Sky member on this week's Night Sky Tourist. speaking to you about the upcoming winter solstice on December the 21st. There is a Chinese celebration on the winter solstice called Dongji that literally translates to winter arrives. In the Chinese tradition, this is a day that everyone gets 1 year older. Although it is not an official holiday, it is a day when families get together and celebrate the year that has passed. Special dumplings are made, and lamb is often churned to strengthen their bodies for the coming winter months. This festival is also celebrated in Japan, Vietnam, and Korea. In other cultures, there are also similar celebrations this time of year. For instance, in Staten Island, New York, where I grew up, my family celebrated an Italian tradition on Christmas Eve that goes back many generations to when fishing was a way of life and became a means to give thanks. It was also not an official holiday, called Festa dei Sette Pesci, or Feast of the Seven Fishes, often referred to as La Vigilia, or the Vigil for the coming of the Savior. It is a huge feast that features seven courses of fish and seafood dishes, plus classic Italian desserts gifted with wishes of love and prosperity for the coming new year. Have a wonderful holiday season, and be sure to celebrate it with your family, creating memories for the future, and make it your own unofficial tradition on the eve of the winter solstice and the new year.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Dirksen, husband of the podcast host. The ancient festival of Yule was celebrated by the Germanic Northern Europeans, or Nordic people, in honor of the god Odin. It is one of the oldest winter celebrations in the world. Most of the Nordic people were hunters and greatly revered the sun because of the importance it played in their lives throughout the course of the year. The midwinter celebration began on the winter solstice and may have lasted for 3 days, 12 days, or until the ale ran out, depending on the various traditions where it was celebrated. It was celebrated with bonfires, feasting and drinking, and ritual sacrifices. There was the Yule log, the Yule boar, and the Yule singing. It was customary to select a large log to light on the hearth at the beginning of the Yule so that it would burn for 12 days straight. The Yule ham was a sacrifice of a wild boar to the Norse god Freyr and has carried over into many modern Christmas traditions around the world today, without the sacrifice part, of course. Yule singing was usually done door to door, with the singers offering the household a drink from the wassail bowl in exchange for gifts. It continues on today in the form of caroling. My favorite holiday tradition in my family has to be putting up our big colorful bulb lights outside the day after Thanksgiving, and decorating our tree, which involves my wife taking out each ornament, placing a hook on them, and handing them to myself and to each of our kids one at a time as we each take part in decorating the tree. Each ornament, from the first one that Vicky and I bought as a couple in 1995 to the handcrafted fisherman that my mom made that used to hang on my tree as a child, represents something special in our lives and a moment to be cherished.
I loved hearing the traditions of my fellow board members. Although we are all Americans celebrating the same holiday, we've all either inherited or invented our own variety of traditions. No two families have the exact same way of celebrating even the exact same holiday, and that's what gives humanity so much rich flavor. I'm sure that as my friends shared various winter solstice traditions from around the world, you probably recognize some of them that have carried over into our modern-day winter holiday celebrations. Our Jewish friends celebrate the 8 miraculous days of light during Hanukkah with menorahs, dreidels, and latkes. Our Christian friends celebrate the birth of a Savior with pine trees, lights, candles, wreaths, nativities, caroling, and a Christmas Eve vigil, all borrowed from various cultures around the world dating back thousands of years. Our African-American friends celebrate Kwanzaa, a new and modern celebration which combines various African first fruit celebration traditions. Families often celebrate with songs, dancing, African drums, storytelling, candles, and a large family meal. And it culminates on the seventh day with gift giving. And then there is Santa Claus. Santa's origins date back to the 3rd century. He was a real person who was born near present-day Turkey. By the time of the Renaissance, he was the most popular saint in all of Europe. The Protestant Reformation actually discouraged the veneration of saints, but the Dutch held really tight to Saint Nick, or Sinterklaas, as they called him. In the 1770s, Dutch groups in New York celebrated the anniversary of his death, and in 1804, woodcuts of St. Nick were handed out at the annual meeting of the New York Historical Society. The engravings had a background with stockings filled with fruit and toys hung over a fireplace, and soon after, he was referred to as the patron saint of New York. In 1822, Clement Clark Moore wrote a poem titled An Account of a Visit from St. Nicholas. But you and I know it better as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. That same decade, stores started advertising Christmas shopping. But it actually took newspapers about 20 years to catch on and create a separate section for Christmas shopping ads. In 1881, the political cartoonist Thomas Nast drew an image of Santa Claus that looks like the form we know and love today. He was a jolly plump man wearing a red suit trimmed in white fur with a bag of toys slung over his shoulder. In the 1890s, the Salvation Army dressed up unemployed men as Santa Claus and sent them into the streets of New York to raise money for the free meal that they gave out at Christmas. Parents had grown fond of telling their children about Santa's naughty and nice lists. In 1939, Robert L. May wrote a poem about Rudolph, one of Santa's reindeer, who started out as an outcast but saved the foggy Christmas with his bright red nose. This poem sold millions of copies year after year at the Montgomery Ward department stores. In 1949, Johnny Marr wrote the song Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer to accompany the story, and it was recorded by Gene Autry. The story of Rudolph has been translated into 25 languages and turned into a television movie narrated by Burl Ives in 1964. And that, my friends, is how legends, myths, and lore are born and evolve and spread around the world. From Turkey to Europe to New York to around the world again, the story of Santa Claus and his reindeer are loved by millions. A couple of years ago, my friend Peter Atkinson read a really fun winter solstice story for the podcast. I came across this story in a book that I have called The Return of Light, 12 Tales from Around the World for the Winter Solstice by Carolyn McVicker Edwards. This story comes from Italy, and it's called La Befana and the Royal Child of Light. Enjoy!
La Befana is a tall old woman with a red shawl and a bent branch broom that goes sweep, swept, sweep. She lives in a thin wooden house with a round top door in the shadows of the dark purple mulberry trees. La Befana sweeps the mulberry leaves, sweep, swept, sweep, into piles, crunch, crackle, crunch. La Befana has a long nose and a hump on her back. Her hands are speckled with pale chocolate. She pins the white billow of her hair with bone combs. Befana's kitchen shelves are libraries of jars and tins, honey, almonds, hazelnuts, and the skins of lemons and tangerines, cloves, vanilla beans, and cinnamon. Hills of sugar and silky flowers with chipped china teacups for scoops. Up until the winter of her story, La Befana had swept and baked for no one else but herself. Sweep, swept, sweep, went her broom, year after day, day after year. Spicy, doughy smells curled out of her windows as she baked. beat, bet, beat. Knead, nod, knead went her hands. Clack, drack, clack went the sticks for her stove. Labafana never spoke. People heard her noises, but they never heard her voice. At least people could not remember the last time they had. But one year in wintertime, when the leaves dried in yellow-brown piles, Bafana had a conversation. Everyone heard her. And then Labafana's story changed forever. One fine morning, a strange parade marched down the Mulberry Street. Everyone watched, shouting and crowding at the edges of the procession. Labafana stayed inside, but she parted her curtains and stared. When she saw enormous clopping brown beasts with knobbed knees and bumps on their backs, cases carved with suns and crescents thumped the sides of the brown giants with each huge mincing step they took. Jeweled-colored flags, an old man in a red turban at the front, a younger head in a pillow of purple at the middle, and a third, robes green as orange tree leaves at the rear. A boy jigging to the sound of a string box, another shaking a belled stick with red ribbons. Bafana's breath frosted her window. She rubbed it clear with her fingers. At that moment, everyone saw it. A child sprinted out of the throng straight to Bafana's door. He hopped from foot to foot there, knocking, knock, neck, knock at her door. Labafana cracked the door, then opened it wide enough to show herself. Her hand clutched around her bent branch broom. The music stopped. The parade paused. It was as if even the strangers knew that Labafana needed the silence to try out her words. Everyone saw the little boy reach for the hand that held the broom. People saw Labafana's hand tighten on the old bent branch. But she gave him her other hand, closing his little one in her own. People puffed with breath they did not let out. The child spoke first.
"We're looking for the child of light, Nona. We're looking for the royal child who will light up the world."
People's breaths went out and in.
"Eh?"
said Labafana.
"We're looking for the child of light, Nona. Come with us. We're bringing the royal child our gifts."
Labafana was silent.
"Come, Nona," said the boy.
And then Labafana spoke, her voice husky with years of no use.
"But I have my sweeping," she said. "Come," said the boy. "I have my baking, child," said Labafana. "And I have to gather the wood."
And then the boy wrapped his arms around her gray skirts and clung. Everyone watched Labafana set away her broom. Labafana rested both old hands on the child's small back. Then somewhere in the clear air, the music started again. Like dancers, the people and all the animals in the parade pivoted, began to jostle, to call out to one another. The boy unstuck himself and plunged away. Labafana stood for moments before she clenched her broom and shut the door hard. If you had been listening at the door, you would have heard the sounds again of that bent branch broom. Sweep, swept, sweep. Sweep, swept, sweep. But the sound would have smudged a little. Sweep, swept, 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 as if Labafana were leaning and thinking. If you had peeked in the window, you could have seen her dreaming there, leaning on the broom. Her eyes like chocolate melting, tiny images of Labafana mirrored again and again in a library of kitchen jars, now very still. Then, suddenly, Labafana and all the mirrored Labafanas began to move, and all around the kitchen moved too. Lids clattering from tins, the rolling pin dancing, eggs bursting themselves in red and green bowls. Beat, bet, beat, knead, nod, knead, cloves and cinnamon swirling through the air, rinds of lemons and oranges scattering like commas and parentheses on the pages of rolled-out flour, vanilla beans shivering in snowy sugar, almonds and hazelnuts cavorting in the honey, cream frothing, chocolate slivers spinning from the backs of Labafana's hands, drifting onto balls, twists, and mezzaluna rolls of cookies and cakes, the hot oven mouth closing on them all. Then, in a careen of perfume, Labafana packed a basket, layer after layer, li-lo-li of cookies, cakes, and candies. Then, are you watching? Labafana smoothing her hair and pinching her combs tight, pinning her red hair shawl at her throat, resting her fingers on her eyes, and finally taking up the basket and opening up the door. Labafana has her gifts for the royal child, but it is twilight now, and a red ribbon on the street is all that is left of the parade. Can Labafana catch up? A mulberry leaf settles like a crown on her feet. Labafana disappears and returns with her broom. She begins to run. The basket bounces at her side. She wheezes. She runs and runs, and then suddenly a gust catches her. The broom tilts and lifts. Labafana flies away up high into the stars. Labafana is a tall old woman with a bent branch broom that goes sweep, swept, sweep. She lives in the shadows of the mulberry trees, and she bakes and gathers wood and talks not much at all. But since the winter, Labafana packs every year a basket of gifts, cookies, cakes, and candies for the royal child of light. Labafana never catches up to the parade, but she flies each year across the sky, stopping at every house below. She is looking for the child who will light up the world. Labafana is never sure what the child may look like, so she leaves her gifts at every home, in case the girl or the boy within is the royal child of light.
No matter what winter holiday you celebrate, no matter what your favorite family traditions are, I wish you and all your loved ones a very happy holiday. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist Podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist Podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it and giving us 5 stars. Your ratings are really important to me, and they help more people discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. Until next time, keep looking up.